of 1959, we are committed to consult with Pakistan and to take whatever action is necessary under the constitutional guidelines that I have to follow as president of our country to protect the security of Pakistan, involving military force if necessary. In addition to that, we're increasing and will maintain an increased level of naval forces in the northern Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf region. And we are now exploring with some intensity the establishment of facilities for the servicing of our air and naval forces in the northern Indian Ocean, Persian Gulf region. These actions have been initiated ever since I've been in office. They are consistent and clear, and we're concentrating on them now with an increased level of commitment because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
Mr. Boulder?
Mr. President, the timing of this appearance the day before the Iowa caucuses suggests a political motive. Why did you accept this appearance when you have refused to appear any place where your challengers could confront you directly?
Mr. Boulder, in a time of crisis for our country, I believe it's very important for the president not to assume in a public way the role of a partisan campaigner in a political contest. Our country is in a state of crisis, and this has been a consistent policy that I have maintained since the Iranians captured and held hostage Americans in Tehran. I do not consider this to be a campaign forum, meet the press, and I'm not here as a partisan candidate. As you well know, we have been presenting my views very clearly to the American people in multiple ways, my own appearances, my before the press, my briefing of groups in the White House, the sending of surrogates for me to Iowa. I think my positions and the actions that I've taken have been very clear. And my appearance on this show is an opportunity to give you, for instance, a chance to ask me questions about issues that are important to the American people.
A colleague of mine printed this question 3 weeks ago at the time that you canceled out of the Iowa debate as an example of what you might have been asked, and I'd like to ask it. With all due respect, we still have 5.8% unemployment. Inflation has risen from 4.8% to 13%. We still don't have a viable energy policy. Russian troops are in Cuba and Afghanistan. The dollar is falling, gold is rising, and the hostages after 78 days are still in Tehran. Just what have you done, sir, to deserve renomination?
Well, since I've been in the White House, I've done everything possible to strengthen our own nation, not only militarily, but economically and politically, and I think morally and ethically as well. We've strengthened our alliances with our allies, which has been pointed out already on this program. We've dealt not only with peace for our country, but peace for others, working with the British in Rhodesia, working with Egyptians and Israelis in the Middle East. We've tried to expand American friendships among other nations on Earth, notably being successful in retaining our friendship with the people of Taiwan, opening up a new and friendly relationship with the recognition of a fourth of the world's total population in China. We've had, I think, a great improvement in our own nation's relationships with countries as expressed by recent United Nations votes. Domestically, I've dealt with the nation's crises and problems as best I could, working with Congress that sometimes acts too slowly. Since the first day I've been in office, we've been addressing the most serious threat to our nation domestically, and that is inflation, tied very closely with energy. Energy is the single most important factor in the increase in the inflation rate since I've been in office. Just in the last 12 months, OPEC's increased energy prices by 80%. As a matter of fact, all the increase for practical purposes of the inflation rate since I've been in office have been directly attributable to increase in OPEC oil prices. When I was elected, the prime threat to our country was extremely high unemployment. We've added a net increase of 9 million jobs, and we've cut the unemployment rate down by 25%. This has been a very good move toward the strengthening of our nation's economy. We've cut down our balance of trade deficit. We have seen a very clear increase in net income for Americans above inflation, above taxes paid of about 7.5%. Corporate profits have gone up about 50%. And I think our nation is much more unified. And I believe in addition to that, there's a greater respect for the integrity and the truthfulness of the government of our country. So we've made some progress. I might say that I don't claim to know the answers. They are not easy questions to address. They're not easy problems to solve. But our country is united. We are struggling with these very difficult and complicated questions. I think that they need to be pursued further, hopefully in a second term for myself.
Ms. Woodruff?
Mr. President, you said in an interview recently that the invasion of Afghanistan had changed your opinions of the Russians more drastically than anything else since you've been in office. Why did it take almost 3 years for you to discover the true intentions of the Soviet leadership?
I've never doubted the long-range policy or the long-range ambitions of the Soviet Union. The fact that we have consistently strengthened our own nation's defense after 15 years of a decrease in commitment to our nation's defense vis-a-vis the Soviets is one indication of that. All of the actions that I described earlier, the strengthening of NATO, the movement into the northern Indian Ocean, the search for peace in the Middle East, and so forth, were directly because of the ultimate threat by the Soviet Union to world peace. But it is obvious that the Soviets' actual invasion of a previously non-aligned country, an independent, freedom-loving country, a deeply religious country with their own massive troops, is a radical departure from the policy or actions that the Soviets have pursued since the Second World War. It is a direct threat because Pakistan, formerly a buffer state between the Soviet Union and Iran and the world's oil supplies and the Hormuz Straits and the Persian Gulf, has now become kind of an arrow aiming at those crucial strategic regions of the world. So this is a major departure by the Soviet Union from their previous actions. Their long-range policies have been well understood by me then and still are.
And yet your administration didn't take any steps to offset the huge increases in the number of Cuban troops in Africa in recent years. Soviet combat troops are still in Cuba today, despite your statement last fall that their presence was not acceptable. In light of this failure to counter Soviet aggression earlier, do you accept any responsibility at all for the Soviet calculation that they could move into Afghanistan with impunity?
Well, the Soviets have seriously misjudged our own nation's strength and resolve and unity and determination, and the condemnation that has accrued to them by the world community because of their invasion of Afghanistan. As you know, Cuban troops went into Angola long before I became president, and the Soviet brigade, about 2,000 to 2,500 troops, have been in Cuba since the early 1960s. There has obviously been a buildup in the Soviet adventurism in the Horn of Africa in Ethiopia. These moves were of great concern to us. But the point that I would like to make clear is that we have always had a very complicated relationship with the Soviet Union based on cooperation when we could together move toward a peaceful resolution of the world's problems, like the negotiation of the SALT Treaty, and competition with the Soviet Union when our interests were at cross purposes in any region of the world. I think our strength has been clearly demonstrated. The resolve of our nation has been clearly demonstrated. The support of our allies has been clearly demonstrated. Indeed, the support of the world in the condemnation of the Soviets' recent invasion has also been clearly demonstrated. Times change and circumstances change. Our country has been one that does commit itself to the preservation of peace, but peace through strength, not weakness. That has been our policy. That will still be our policy.
Mr. President, is there any specific new hope for ending the hostage crisis with Iran?
I can't predict the early end of that situation. The concern that I feel about the hostages today is just as great as it was a month ago or 2 months ago. Our policy on the Iranian capturing of our hostages has been clear and consistent. It's an abhorrent violation of every moral and ethical standard and international law. It's a criminal act. A group of terrorists, kidnappers seizing innocent victims and holding them for attempted blackmail. In an unprecedented way, supported and encouraged by government officials themselves, our response has been clear: to protect, first of all, the short-term and long-range interest of our country. Secondly, to protect the safety and the lives of the hostages themselves. Third, to pursue every possible avenue of the early and safe release of our hostages. Fourth, to avoid bloodshed, if possible, because I have felt from the very beginning that the initiation of a military action or the causing of bloodshed would undoubtedly result in the death of the hostages. And fifth, and perhaps most difficult of all, is to arouse and to sustain the strong support by the vast majority of nations on earth for our position as an aggrieved nation and the condemnation of the world for Iran for this direct violation of international law. It's an abhorrent act. I don't know when the hostages will be released, but we will maintain our intense interest in it. We will maintain our commitment to every possible avenue to carry out the policies I've just described to you, and we will maintain as best we can the full support of the rest of the world. And that concerted pressure from many sources, including the recent sanctions that we have initiated against Iran, I believe and I hope and I pray, will result in the safe release of our hostages. I can't predict exactly when.
How do you answer criticism, Mr. President, that your administration bungled the admission of the Shah to this country chiefly by not providing guaranteed protection to the American embassy in Iran after American diplomats had warned that there might be this kind of trouble, and there had been, in fact, a seizure of the embassy a few months previously?
I don't have any apology at all for letting the Shah come here. As an extremely sick person...
What about protection for the embassy, Mr. President?
For treatment. The embassy had been attacked in the past. Embassies around the world are often subjected to attacks. In every instance, the Iranian officials had joined with our own people to protect the embassy of the United States. Following the seizure of the embassy earlier in the year, we had carried out a substantial program for the strengthening of the embassy's defenses. After the Shah came here to the United States for treatment, and we notified the Iranian officials of that fact, we were again assured by the Iranian Prime Minister and the Iranian Foreign Minister that the embassy would be protected. It was indeed protected for about 10 days, following which the Ayatollah Khomeini made a very aggressive and abusive speech, and when it was attacked by militant terrorists, the Iranian government withdrew their protection for the embassy. It was an unpredictable kind of thing. This has never been done, so far as I know, in modern history, to have a government support a terrorist act of this kind, the kidnapping of hostages and the holding of them for attempted blackmail. But there was no stone unturned in our attempt to maintain relations with Iran, which is in our interest, and at the same time to protect our people.
Mr. Rowan?
Mr. President, some of our allies are now saying that Iran already is in chaos, and that if the U.S. puts the economic screws on, that country could fall apart and make it easy for the Soviet Union to pick up the pieces. Are you listening to this, or are you still going to put the screws on Iran?
That's been a constant concern of mine, Mr. Ryan. What we want is a unified Iran, not fragmented. We want a stable and independent Iran, and we want a secure Iran. But we cannot accept the abhorrent act supported by the Iranian officials of the terrorists holding Americans hostage. We have decided to take action against Iran with the presence of our naval forces to prevent the injury to our hostages, and secondly, to impose with an increasing degree of severity sanctions against Iran that would encourage them to release the hostages. There has been obviously a new element introduced into the Iranian hostage crisis in recent weeks with the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. My belief is that many of the responsible officials in Iran now see that this major threat to Iran's security and the peace of Iran is becoming paramount, and that there will be an additional effort on their part to secure the release of the hostages and remove the isolation of Iran from the rest of the civilized world. But I think our actions have been well considered. We have taken every element of caution about the possibility which you describe. And in my judgment, the best thing for Iran to do now is to release the hostages, to seek redress of their alleged grievances in the international forum and the courts of the individual nations, and to begin to strengthen themselves against the possible threat by the Soviets now addressed toward them in Afghanistan.
We have less than a minute and a half. Mr. Berger?
In view of what you just said, Mr. President, are you prepared to accept a delay or postponement of the imposition of the economic sanctions against Iran?
No. Those sanctions will be pursued by ourselves unilaterally and joined in by as many of our allies as will agree. We have had very acceptable support by our allies in this imposition of sanctions against Iran, and we've had overwhelming support in the International Court of Justice and in the United Nations from many nations who've observed this situation. So I will not postpone the imposition of sanctions.
Ms. Woodruff?
Mr. President, in 1976, you castigated the Republicans for what you described as a misery index of some 13%. That misery index is now up to 19%. What do you think about it now?
Well, obviously, when a nation is in a state of crisis, a deep obsession and concern with the holding of innocent Americans and an acknowledged threat to world peace by a Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, with high inflation brought about by, in my opinion, unwarranted increases in the price of oil, this preys on the mind of Americans. We're taking action, as I've described in this program and previously, to alleviate these concerns, and I believe that the unity of America has been paramount. I believe the future will hold a better prospect for the alleviation of those tensions.
Thank you, Mr. President, for being with us today on Meet the Press.